President Biden is racing towards his 100th day in office, and that includes pushing for more big changes through legislation. Biden has turned to executive orders in the face of legislative gridlock, as he did last Thursday when he unveiled a handful of orders dealing with gun control. Still, at the signing, he exhorted Congress to push through comprehensive legislative solutions.
No matter how long it takes, we're going to get these passed. We're not going to give up. We have an opportunity to fulfill the first responsibility of government, to keep our people safe. And in the process, we can show the world and show ourselves that democracy works, that we can come together and get big things done.
But with a razor-thin majority for Democrats in the Senate and no signs from Republicans that there's an appetite for bipartisanship, can this Congress actually still get things done? And with major proposals on the table, what's at stake for Massachusetts? Massachusetts Congresswoman Catherine Clark is Assistant Speaker of the House, representing the 5th District. She's uniquely positioned to help answer those questions. So we caught up with Congresswoman Clark just last hour. And I started by asking her that pretty big question. Does democracy still work?
You know, I think that I look at it from a little different lens in that what is working, what we've seen in the last 100 days coming out of the House and the administration is really a reaffirmation that we can accomplish great things and meet this moment of great challenge for the American people. So whether we are looking at passing the American Rescue Plan, an almost $2 trillion plan to help us meet the pandemic and get our economy going again, or whether it's passing voting rights protection, the George Floyd police reforms, the Dream and Promise Act, gun safety bills, VAWA, right to organize protections. This is all a signal to me that our democracy and our focus is in the right place. It is meeting the needs of our country in this time of pandemic and the economic fallout, all with an eye towards equity as our through line. So I think the beginning of this administration and our work in Congress is actually underscoring that democracy is still there and robust.
So if we stipulate that these are our sweeping pieces of legislation, a big part of the Biden agenda, with the narrow margins in the House and Senate, some of this will get through regardless of bipartisanship. Before we go into details on specific bills, wither the priority of bipartisanship itself. Is it still, as part of House leadership, is it still a key priority?
You know, for me, the way that I look at bipartisanship is that it is not a goal in and of itself, but bipartisanship helps representative government work. It takes those ideas from different ideologies, geography, communities and perspective and life experience, and helps put that together to come out with a better product. And what has been so dismaying and divisive in Congress, we don't see those same divisions across partisan lines in communities and outside of the Beltway. You know, we are seeing broad Republican support for modernizing highways, roads, and streets, broad support for addressing gun violence in this country and support for the specific bills the House already passed. We see broad Republican support for building and improving public schools and for so many of the provisions in the American Rescue Plan. From, you know, I am hearing from colleagues across the country about Republican governors and state legislators and city council members and county commissioners who really support so much of the work that we're doing. So I don't know.
So you feel like Republicans and
disconnect, yeah, with Republicans.
That was the question.
Congress.
Yeah, that was the question. And are you saying there's a disconnect there?
There is absolutely one. And in some ways, we are doing this incredible effort in a bipartisan manner, but not within Congress itself. And I think the answer to that really has to come from the Republican members of the House and Senate on how they can explain to the people who have sent them to Congress that they don't seem to be working for them, that they seem to be engaged in some other process of still trying to align themselves with the former president and what he would want them to do.
So let's shift gears now and talk about some of the legislation on the table and how it'll affect the Commonwealth. I want to think about the infrastructure bill. You talked a minute ago about bipartisan support on the ground for modernizing highways and roads. We spoke with another member of the delegation, Massachusetts Congressman Stephen Lynch, last week, and he told us how crucial he thinks the infrastructure package is for the Commonwealth. Here he is.
We're one of the oldest, probably the oldest in the country in terms of rapid transit and our infrastructure, right? We've got some bridges that are very, very old. They've been rehabbed, you know, several times already.
And he talked about just how important this bill in this moment is. In your mind, what is at stake for Massachusetts as Congress puts forward the infrastructure proposal?
This infrastructure proposal, this American Jobs Plan, as the president calls it, is absolutely the critical roadmap to our future. Our infrastructure received a C- on it, the infrastructure report card. And we know that we have close to 500 bridges, 1,200 miles of highway that are rated in poor condition. And we know the challenges to public transportation. We know that we will need a $12 billion investment in our drinking water infrastructure to keep our families and our water supply safe and secure. We know how much we need an investment in available and affordable housing in Massachusetts. And we know the effect of broadband, where we have many areas of this state that have no or only one provider, driving a cost and making access to universal, reliable, high-speed coverage something that is not available to everyone in the Commonwealth. So as we look at these building blocks and continue to expand the understanding of what is infrastructure and that it has to include the robust care agenda that President Biden is talking about, that we cannot get to work and be successful when you are competing with child care and elder care and other family member care issues. All of this is going to be about how we meet this moment of racial, economic, and climate justice. And how do we address all three of this in this tremendous opportunity we have to reinvest in the American people and make sure that we are being inclusive in the way that we do it so that we not only get our economy going again and robust again, but that we are really laying the groundwork for an economy that is anti-racist, that is more inclusive, that starts to address the wealth and income gap in our country, and also looks ahead and says, how do we meet this moment of addressing climate change through this bill with the urgency that is required?
So I want to flag that for a minute and jump in there. This is then, in fact, a redefining of what infrastructure is for generations to come.
I think that's right. And we've always seen that. You know, there's been some pushback and talk about, well, this isn't what we consider, quote, traditional infrastructure. But that's always changed as our innovation changed. We've gone from talking about trains, and then it was cars and highways, and then it was the internet. So it makes absolute sense that this jobs plan is looking at all of that, our traditional needs with roads and bridges, but also looking at the human investments and how we meet the needs of clean energy jobs and manufacturing and home energy and an electrical grid that's updated, how all of this plays together into making sure that we can support our economy, not only now, but in the future, and meet the challenges of this pandemic, but also that of climate change that we know is one that we have to address with urgency if we want to protect our economy and the future of the planet.
I am keyed in about, however, some of the things you said at the beginning of that answer around old school infrastructure and how bad ours is. Are we at a point where the Commonwealth of Massachusetts can't afford to not have this bill passed in Congress? Is it that urgent for us?
I believe it is. I believe it is. These are such major investments that need to be taken on. And it is going to take the power of the federal government and the help to help out our state and local governments to get this work done. You cannot continue to allow our roads and bridges to crumble, to ignore the crisis of public transit. And we also have to be looking at how we use this bill to build opportunity, to make sure that we are also meeting this moment of racial justice and making sure that we are taking the inequities that we knew were there, but were brought into stark relief by this pandemic, and addressing them in this bill moving forward. It is the need for action in Massachusetts that is going to be reflected in the solutions in this bill. And it's an exciting opportunity, but it's also a critical one if we are going to be able to undertake the kind of improvement in our infrastructure and the broad-based improvement required.
So I'm going to switch gears again. I know you have it's important to you, the Paycheck Fairness Act, which aims to address the gender pay gap. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce wrote a letter opposing it, and I want to read you a piece of that. It said in part, quote, "Factors such as experience, education, location, and shift work can and often do result in pay differentials between employees employed by the same business in similar position," end quote. And it goes on to say that the bill would effectively, quote, "eliminate the ability of an employer to make compensations decisions based on such factors," end quote. How do you respond to that criticism? And what is key to you for the Commonwealth in the Paycheck Fairness Act?
Well, let's be clear. This isn't just a women's issue. Pay inequity hurts kids. It hurts communities. It hurts families, and it is long past time that we eliminate this gender wage gap and guarantee that women can challenge pay discrimination and hold employers accountable. And the fact that this is in any way controversial is not looking at just the very recent lessons of this pandemic. We have seen that the economic fallout from COVID-19 has fallen the hardest on women. And why is that? Because women, our economy is built on the low or underpaid and sometimes free work of women. And when you are a low-wage earner and your child care disappears, schools close, it is the low-wage earner who has to stay home and make those child care rearing decisions and other decisions. And so women have been paying the price for gender inequity, and especially women of color, for far too long. So let's just do what's fair. When you're doing the same work, you should be paid the same rate of pay. And that is going to be good for our entire economy, including the very employers who are trying to stop this legislation. So we are going to pass this in the House this week. It is way past time. I ran on pay equity when I ran for Congress in 2013. And this is a fight for not only the future, but this is a continuation of the fight of our mothers and our grandmothers. And more than five decades after the passage of the Equal Pay Act, we are still seeing women making 82 cents of every dollar earned by men, and it just goes down from there for women of color. So this is the week to do this. It is long past time, and it is another one of those inequities that the pandemic has, you know, tore back the curtain and showed us that we need to make this investment in women if we want to build the economy of the future.